Hey guys, this Friday pod is a little bit different. We don't have Adam and we have a new face, Perry. Perry is the CEO of Unemployable and he's joined us from South Korea. And not only that, he's opened up about his journey and what we've been doing at Unemployable in behind the scenes, not only growing a podcast, but also growing a coaching program, not only in business, but also the property space. And it was amazing. He was open. He was vulnerable. So much value was added, especially for people in the startup phase of businesses that are in the trenches. Then we talked about tariffs, a very, very important topic that is one of the biggest topics around the world at the moment, and how it's affecting Australian business, how it's affecting importing from China, and how it's affecting people that are importing goods into the USA, and some things that you can do about it that you can implement in your business to overcome that. And we also talked about the global market. We had Macro Mark open up about what's happening in the markets. Monday was a day that basically anyone that's in the market lost money. And he goes through multiple things and some of the stuff that he's actually dealing with on a daily basis from investing in the markets. And he's given us some tips on how we can control our emotions and not make any irrational decisions. Hope you like it, and we'll see you on the other side. Hey, guys, and welcome to another Friday podcast with the boys. This one definitely does look a little bit different, and there's a new face on the screen, and that is a gentleman named Perry Bentley. Now, some of you guys might know Perry. Most of you guys probably don't know who Perry is, but Perry, as he has it, as you can see on his tagline underneath his name, is the CEO of Unemployable. So Perry is a very, very key team member in what we do with the Unemployable podcast and with the Unemployable coaching programs that we have, and especially now with the new Unemployable property, which we are launching very shortly. And he's not based in Australia like us. I'm here in the studio at the moment. We've got James in Burleigh Heads. We've got Mark in Byron Bay. And we've got Perry in South Korea, which is moving soon actually to Thailand. So I just want to say, Perry, thank you very much for coming on today.
감사합니다. 안녕하세요. Yeah, nice to see everyone.
And we'll have captions underneath for subtitles. Those who missed that.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'll get Jerome to lock that in afterwards. He's from Philippines. I'm sure he'll have real good time putting Korean subtitles in, but we'll see how that goes.
It's like those Bruce Lee movies and stuff. It's like one fight.
Yeah, it's so true. So thank you, Perry, for making it on. And James and Mark, as usual, thank you very much. For those of you guys that don't know who James is, he's an absolute weapon, a lot of experience in the property development space and buying and selling businesses and growing businesses, right? So he's currently putting some deals together as we speak. Like he says, he's been grinding off camera. And he runs at a very, very hot temperature, as you can see. He's a little bit red in the face today, but that's all right.
It's the mood lighting. I was just in pre-production in the makeup. That's a little bit.
And we've got Mark, and Mark is a very successful entrepreneur himself. He's got a very successful Amazon online business, which he's live on Shopify as well. And we had a great meeting about that a couple of weeks ago. And he's also a very successful trader. We call him Macro Mark. And he's just, his understanding of the markets is unbelievable. The amount of time and effort that he's been putting into educating himself is unreal. And we'll try and touch on some of those points today. Obviously, Adam is not with us. He's gallivanting around Europe. He's in Paris at the moment, going to a Bitcoin convention, which is amazing because we're doing a lot more Bitcoin pods. And he's meeting some of the biggest Bitcoin people in the world, and unfortunately there was about an hour gap that we couldn't make work, so we called on Perry. And I wanted to start off with Perry, to be honest with you, because for those of you guys that are listening that are either in a startup phase,
just a quick one while we touched on the topic of Bitcoin, if anyone is interested in learning more about Bitcoin, Adam did an amazing pod with Lawrence Lepard,
yes,
who's an author and massive Bitcoin investor, connected to Michael Saylor and all the big Bitcoin heavies in the industry. That was an awesome podcast on not necessarily the explanation of how Bitcoin works, but the explanation of why Bitcoin was created, like what's going on in the world today and why that solution is the one that presented itself. And I had so many of my friends who, you know, I reckon I've told to buy Bitcoin 4 years ago, just ignore me, watch that podcast and say, now I fucking get it, now I understand. So maybe we can drop the link. But Lawrence,
especially now after the last sort of 4 or 5 days, if you're going to go now.
We'll come
back to that and give Macro Mark the mantle for a good 5 minutes to try and debrief on what happened in the last week.
Just to jump on that as well, what you're saying there, it's every 2 weeks on the Sunday that we'll be pushing out the Bitcoin episodes. So we've got one coming up this Sunday. So get ready. We've actually got some where Adam's just gone, nah, that was crap. We're not doing that one. And then there's other ones where he's like, come on, wow, we need to post this yesterday. I'm like, no, Sunday, yeah. Mate, Sunday. So
stay on schedule.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Perry, I thought it'd be good starting off with you so people could get a little bit of an understanding on what you do and how you're involved with Unemployable, because you're such a big key team member. And I know that there's a lot of people that will be listening to this that are literally in the trenches of business, doing multiple things, wearing multiple hats. And I know you are honestly like an octopus, and you're one of the first people that I've actually worked with remotely. I've always been that type of guy that has, you know, businesses here locally, and most of our team members, well, all of our team members really are locally. And like I said, you're the first one that I've worked with overseas. Obviously, the time difference isn't too bad. What time is it in South Korea again now? Is it 2 or 3 hours behind?
Only 1 hour, mate. It's 20 past 3 right now. So
yeah, 20 past 3. So obviously the time difference works really well. But I guess explain a little bit, because Unemployable, we've grown very, very fast in a very short period of time. And not only are we growing from the podcast, but we're also growing as a business, right? With the business coaching program that we have, and also the new Unemployable property. So we're really growing Unemployable into a proper media company at scale. And when we started this, none of us really knew what we were doing. And we've learned and we've tested and measured so much over the last, you know, 16, 17 months. So explain a little bit about who you are and what you're doing. And I guess just, you know, the whole timing of everything that's gone on over the last 16 months.
Yeah, well, I can take it a step back and just give kind of a on how I got into the sphere of Australia without even going to Australia, which is started learning. Well, I was backpacking through Thailand. I quit my job, didn't want to go back, dropped out of college and was like, okay, I need to figure out ways to make money online. And one thing led to another. Someone recommended Reliable Education. And, you know, going from that base, I started learning how to build Amazon business, started talking to Joe, who was the CEO at the time and then founder of Reliable, and started getting into the operational side, because I was just like, shit, this is fun. You guys know how to make money from nothing. And I just thought that was a really interesting area, because look, mate, my view has always been, whenever I was in school and stuff, I was sitting there dribbling, looking at the wall. And, you know, you get to a point where you're thinking to yourself, this is probably not for me. You know, I started studying law thinking that's going to work for me. No. And, you know, when I found my tribe, it was like, okay, I think I can do something with this. And, you know, lo and behold, the first product I did was Absolute Tat, did nothing. But, you know, you keep pushing through and then you find where you're actually good. And one thing that I found that I was really good at was creating content, and specifically ads, and just test. And from that, getting into the operational background, you know, I started just doing little projects for Adam. He'd like message me up every, you know, random 6 months here and go, hey, I've got an idea for this project. And and then like 2 days later, be like, oh no, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm like, okay,
yeah, right. Adam with an idea, that's he's got plenty of ideas.
The fire star,
he's like, man. The idea man.
Yeah, he's amazing at that. But you know, it just. One thing led to another, and then the opportunity for the podcast came, and you know, you guys basically said, hey, look, we've got this, you know, how much you want to be part of it? And then I just went, look, and I just sent a proper letter down sort of thing saying, I want skin in the game. And, you know, for the first 3 to 6 months, I got literally nothing but just, hey, let's do some work. And, you know, it's been the best experience, man. This last 16 months have been chaos. You know,
can I add something there you missed in your resume? You're the number two Caucasian blonde voiceover actor in Korea at the moment. There's only two of you, so I mean, you're obviously second place, but
sadly three now, James. You know, and sadly the third guy's actually going out there and knocking on doors, so I'm screwed, mate.
Wow, lucky you've got you've got unemployable.
You know what's funny is there's been many times where we're on a Zoom call on very important business, and he is literally sitting in his actor's chair, and they are putting makeup on him, and he's got this crazy outfit on, and he's like, "Yeah, okay, boys, yeah, we'll get that done, and we'll push through this through the sales funnel." And I'm like, "I can't even take this guy seriously right now," but it's true. Yeah, he's in a lot of you know TV commercials and different things, which is pretty cool. So, man of many talents. But Perry, I guess, you do a lot of things, right? Mm. Like, I mean, from content is one thing, strategy is another thing. You're building websites, you know, you're doing all the content every week on those emails. You're dealing with the podcast and dealing with our YouTube team. You're dealing with the editors overseas. You're managing a lot of things. And I just want you to tell the audience and these people that are listening, because I know there's a lot of people that will be in the exact same position as you are, and sometimes probably overwhelmed at times, going, "Shit, I've got a ton of work to do." So how do you actually manage that?
It's like working with you guys and stuff like that. I think the most important thing is, look, you're always going to point, and it's what Dan said as well, Dan from MX Store. He said you get to a point and then you break down, right? And you get to a point, you break down, and so before you get to that point where you're going to break down, you need to start putting in processes where you can just start alleviating it. So what do? We got me an assistant who I can just give emails. I don't touch emails now. And I think that no one should touch emails anymore. There should be a filter there where you've got someone who's looking at them and only sending you the most important things. I was just saying that to Mark as well. You know, I only look at WhatsApp now. Again, it's just like, how many channels do you actually need? But having a team around you who push you in the same direction, I think that that's the only way that you can make something work. If you try and do everything on your own, you're 100% of a failing company. I'd rather have 10%, 20% of a successful one anytime.
Yeah, because you're also managing multiple people, right? You're managing editors overseas, you're managing the EA, you're managing Stuart as an example for, you know, YouTube and Instagram. We're also managing new projects, right? We've got unemployable business, and we have unemployable property, which is basically a startup, right? With our new partners, Shannon and Carson, there's been a shit ton of work that you've been doing in behind the scenes on that as well. So tell me a little bit more about what your day-to-day looks like, because there's many times where you're emailing me messaging me on WhatsApp, sorry, going, "Hey boys, just to let you know, I'm pulling an all-nighter tonight because I really got to get this, you know, sales funnel done or this website done. So anything you need, let me know." There's not many times that I get a message like that from anybody that I've worked with that is like, "Hey, by the way, I'm not going to sleep today because I'm so committed and I want to get this work done." Right. So yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I had 3 hours sleep last night. It's funny you say that. Literally last night, we've got this landing page that we want to build out. So what I do is I just got a book and I just write all the things that we need to be doing. And then I just cross them off one at a time. And we've got multiple projects at the moment. So realistically, you know, it's going, okay, which are the big ones that need to be done now? And it comes back to what the one thing, right? So it always comes back to what's the most important thing now that's going to move the needle. But it's taken me years to get to a point where I actually start working on things that I know are going to be important, because beforehand it's just kind of, you know, everything scattered. But to your point of, you know, why do I do those all-nighters? It's because it's on my mind, dude. Like, that's all it comes down to. It's like I'm a workaholic. That's all it comes down to. And I think that, and I really stick by this, being exceptional these days is not that difficult. All you got to do is turn up and do another hour extra than what most people do, and you're going to actually probably succeed. But most people don't even put the extra hour in because they want to go to the pub, or they want to get, you know, fucked, or go see some parties or whatever they like doing, you know. I'm not judging anyone, you know, but it's how it is.
Hey Perry, can we back up and double click on that one thing, because we had the unemployable catch up or coaching student catch up on the weekend on Saturday, and I spoke to so many different entrepreneurs that, you know, were able to succinctly tell me about their businesses in 30 to 90 seconds. And the one theme, and I think I was attentive to it because it's something that's been going on in my business with me as well, and so definitely not passing judgment here, but the one theme that I really noticed is in that 30 to 90 seconds, everybody was able to tell me about so many different things that they had on their go, like potential options or avenues to take their businesses. And the one thing that stood out for me listening to that is, oh my God, you guys, you probably need to cross off four of those things and just focus on one clear path to market. And it was maybe I was attuned to it and I saw it, because that's the difficulty that I've been going through with my business. I've been focusing on potentially new products, potentially new markets, potentially Walmart, potentially Shopify, potentially all these different avenues. And it hit me at that moment that I just need to focus on one thing. And you know, I think with the conversation that we've had with Dan recently, it's just mastering that content metadata flywheel and getting to the so how do people get better at, you know, that one thing, that linchpin? And this is something that Adam talks about all the time. Like, maybe some tips on that.
I think for me, it's just understanding, you know, like what, like you said, when you've got four different things, like different things pulling you away, you've got Shopify, you've got Amazon, maybe you've got a TikTok shop, right? You've got these three different pathways. It's just asking yourself, first of all, well, where's your customer, right? Starting from the beginning of, again, who are you actually trying to target? And then going, well, are they on TikTok? Because if they are on TikTok, then why would you be doing Amazon or the other one until you've got that fully capable, you know? And it's the same with what we're doing with the podcast at the moment is, you know, we are growing on more than one thing, but we're not really spending much time on Spotify or Apple because we know that YouTube is the unlock for us, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could be spending, you know, way more time kind of finding ways to build it out. But honestly, if we just focus on YouTube, every other channel is growing. Every single other channel is growing. And it's the same as, you know, if we go to the social side, which one should we focus on the most? Well, the good thing about socials is you get one piece of content, you can put it on five different platforms, right? And that takes 10 minutes. Great. You know, you've basically put one piece of content out to 50. So I think it's just more focusing on, if you want to have one thing to do, yeah, like you said, choose one and then just go direct with it. Yeah.
And you said for the podcast, you think that YouTube is going to be the big unlock, right? Now, we can know that, and someone can say, like, YouTube is going to be your big unlock, but why don't you focus on all the others at the same time? Does it have something to do with the fact that there's so many little nuances, like, you know, just adjusting that golf swing by 2 millimeters in order to, like, open the floodgates, and it just take time to find those and fine tune those nuances? Is would you agree with that? Is that
Eric's been looking at the back end of YouTube a lot more, right? And so he can adhere to this, right? If it wasn't for Stuart and what he's doing with our CTRs and our thumbnails and how he knows what people are going to click through, we could be putting out every YouTube video, right? And it'll be hitting 200, 300 views. Like, just because, and I've seen other channels, right, where they are doing, you know, similar content, they're business focused, this and this, but their headlines are absolute trash. Their thumbnails are absolute trash. The content itself is okay, you know, but what they're doing is they're not focusing on the intricacies, as you're saying, of actually learning how to do those processes, right? They're just putting it out everywhere. It's the same with Instagram and socials. The reason why we keep getting, like, absolute bangers is because we're putting hooks on them, which are catching people's attention. Again, it's an intricacy. Until you know how to do that, you're just shooting shit for the sake of it. It's like, what's the point?
And it's just a little intro, just so people understand what Stuart actually does on YouTube, because it's a pretty, and I'll get not to divert from Mark's question because it's a very poignant question, but just in 2 seconds or 20 seconds, what's Stuart's role at YouTube? Because it's a pretty broad thing to say Stuart works on YouTube. He creates what and how does he do it? And where's he send it to get this mass traction?
Stuart's job is to get attention, right? That is his job and what he's been doing for, you know, the best part of a decade now. And his goal is to look at a video clip, or like he'll look at this video, right? And he'll go, okay, watch it through and find the most spicy parts of it and go, okay, we can now turn that into a hook or something which is going to get people to be engaged with this video. Now, people think, oh, that's easy. I've tried to do it. I can do it now, but it's not easy. It takes a long time. When we first started doing this, you know, I remember having conversations with Eric, Adam, and we were going, hey, we should try this one. We should try this one. We should try. And they were all duds. They just dud. Why are they not working? And then we kind of just went, well, actually, if you're putting stuff out, you need to think in the mindset of who gives a shit? Like, who actually gives a shit? And so, and I learned that from Adam years ago is, you know, whenever you're putting anything out, a video, when you're putting out a product, what's the gas factor behind it? So it works on the same basis of a product, Mark, like you're saying, or a business or anything. It's just, why is someone going to give a shit about this? And then the intricacies of what Stuart does is that he's had a long time in the game. So he knows what to look at. He can see where the trends are. And is he always right? No. But
he watches the video. He finds the spicy or the controversial pieces, creates a short or a reel or a short bit of content, and puts that up for on all the different platforms to get organic reach for people to then come back into the mothership and watch the YouTube video. Is it something along those lines?
Correct.
Yes. And you said something there. You said organic reach. So, this is being open and vulnerable, you know, as a business, right? And testing and measuring. When we first started, right, we're like, okay, we're going to run ads for YouTube so we could look like we've got a lot of views, right? And that's what we did at the beginning.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people are doing, right? But at the end of the day, all that is a vanity metric, right? You're paying for these views. And most of those views that you're getting are people that are going to watch it for 3 seconds and then they want to know about you.
It's also probably counterintuitive for the algorithm as well, because if you're paying for views, they're less likely to give you that organic reach that you need to build over time and consistency. And
correct. And books, right? But you know what? It's hard because it's like you fall into the vanity metric. You go and you're seeing these views. You got 30,000 views, 50,000 views, 100,000 views, right? I'm so popular. People love us. Meanwhile, right, there's a very, very small percentage of people that are actually listening. And we stopped that straight away. So since that time, everything we've done has been organic, right? We don't run any Instagram ads, no Facebook ads. We haven't been running any Google ads. Not to say that we won't in the future, especially around, you know, the coaching community. But what we've been doing, right, is that persistent, disciplined, hard work, showing up every week, right? James, Mark, Perry, me, Adam, Stuart, Jerome, all these guys, you know, that are working with us, showing up every week on the pod, right? There's days that you're going to want to show up on the pod and you're not going to want to feel like it. You don't have the energy to do it, but we still show up, right? Every Tuesday, they know a pod's dropping, every Friday. And what we've been doing is organically growing. And that is the best level of growth that you can ever get, because that is the people that are watching are the people that are your true raving fans. The one that you're adding value to, that are showing up every week, creating a relationship with you, Mark, with you, James, with myself, with Adam, not so much Perry, because they don't know who he is, but I think we got to get Perry and throw him in the mix as well, because he's so important to having all this put together. And what you don't realize is the people that you're making relationships with, they're making relationships with you without even realizing. And that trust and credibility and relevance that you're creating, what it gives you, basically, you know, there's no friction there, right? So when they sit there and they inquire about a product, or they inquire about a service, or they ask you a question about something, there's so much trust that has been built there, rather than going and you can go and do an ad, which we will in future, but an ad, when someone's looking at you for 10 seconds or 20 seconds, they don't have that relationship over time and in that trust. And that's what we're doing. But what we're doing is very, very difficult to do, because I am very impatient, right? Like we're now on going on close to 15,000 subscribers, right? Like it's growing, but I want it to grow quicker, right? And that's the thing with business is patience.
It's actually quite a pertinent conversation to have. A lot of the people that I subscribe are small businesses. and understand the importance of content. So it's like the behind the scenes of how it's actually happening at Unemployable, because as you're right, Eric, it probably looks like there's just the four mugs up there most of the time, and the subscribers are just going up. But behind the scenes is a fuckload of work strategically, and actually from an implementation perspective as well. So, I mean, maybe there is I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole now. I sort of asked that question just about, and we sort of went off track from where Mark was going, about what does Stuart do to make this thing pop? Yeah. And that, I think that has been answered quite effectively.
But Eric, you mentioned something that I think is really important and worth highlighting. You said something along the lines of we're building, like we've got a core group of raving fans that watch every single episode. And I think what I've learned, especially being in business for myself and then watching others in business, is a lot of people focus on those top line numbers or those vanity metrics like total followers, etc. But it's some simple math. If you have 1,000 clients who spend $1,000 a year, that's $1 million business, just like that. Whereas everyone is too busy focusing on, you know, how do I get 1 million followers on Instagram, or how do I get? All you really need to be focused on, if everyone, and I can take my own advice, of course, but if everyone just focused for a minute on their raving fans, I think the amount of exponential growth that they'd see in their business would just go through the roof. And followers and all these listens and views and comments, I mean, that's just the byproduct of focusing on your raving fans.
But again, we are built around vanity metrics, right? Like we did this not long ago. I shouldn't say we, Perry and the team did this, right? Because we're growing our Instagram as well, right? We had 900 followers, I think, in December. And we're on the verge of cracking 13,000 now. And all we've been doing is posting one video a day on Instagram, right? That's what we've been doing. Just adding value, a post that hopefully some people give a shit, which are the people that are following Unemployable on their wealth creation journeys. And the boys did, they ran some kind of program. You could probably add, what was that program you ran? And you can look into different people's Instagrams.
Oh, there's a couple, but one of them is Social Bleed that we use.
Right, Social Bleed, right? So they go onto Social Bleed and basically Social Bleed, and they rate Instagram profiles, right? So, and then you can actually go in there and basically see who's cheating. It's hilarious. And we actually did it with multiple people and acquaintances and people that we know. And I'm just like shocked going, this person's got all these followers, yet these are the engaged ones. And all these other ones will be bought and paid for. It blew my mind, right? Again, it's another vanity metric, right? Because we want to feel important. When someone opens up my Instagram and sees that I've got 3,500 followers and someone has 600,000, well, that 600,000 one's definitely more important, right? They're going to be, you know more about business or know more about property or know more about wealth creation and more popular and this and that. But sometimes that's not the case. And we've got a client, right? And this is what really, really sparked my interest, like mind blown type of thing. You know, over the last 7 years, she's been growing a YouTube channel. She now has 2 million subscribers on YouTube, 3 million followers across all of her platforms. Why? Because she's being consistent every day, every week. She's showing up. And that's what we're doing at Unemployable. And we will be the same. The writing is on the wall for me. But you know what? It's difficult. We've got to pivot. We've got to do these types of Friday pods now because Adam's overseas. So, you know, instead of throwing a spanner in the works and say, okay, no, Adam, you're not on the podcast anymore because we're going to do it in the studio. No, let's test it. Let's measure it. Let's all buy our mics. Let's all sit here and create value and create content still, because this is what we're doing every day. And the reality is most people will do it for a month. They'll do it for 6 months. They'll do it for a year, and then something will get in the way and they'll stop.
But we had a podcast on Dan Martell. He's pretty famous in the SaaS space in the US. He's pretty much the coach of anyone that's designing a software program. And I saw a post of his 2 days ago, and some smart ass was, when he was on Instagram, saying, you know, because he's in pretty good shape, he likes CrossFit, he gets into CrossFit, what's your TRT levels? And he goes, consistency in action. And then he did a post when he's in his Lambo saying, you know, basically, like, you fuckers, I've been creating content Just like working out at the gym, I've been doing it my whole life at CrossFit, but I've been creating content for 8 years, and it's only in the last 24 months has it blown up. Just constantly same amount of work, and it's just gone bottom left, top right in a heartbeat. No one remembers the eight years. They just see him now with a massive audience, and they want to rip the shit out of him. He's fit as well.
The overnight success, like you look at Patrick Bet David as an example, and you look at some of the old videos that he's done. It's unbelievable to see how much of a rock star he is today and what he's doing compared to where he was 10 years ago. And it'll be the same thing for us guys. Our first podcast, we were all scared shitless. We didn't know what we were talking about. We didn't know how to speak in the mic. We were talking like this. And we were talking like this, and we didn't know what was going on, right? But now we know what we're doing. We're pivoting in the chair. We, you know, trying to not talk over each other, which is a little bit more difficult in this new platform because you can't, you know, you're not physically there. But we'll just get better and better and better. Perry, want to say thank you. I'm going to change topics now. I just want to say thank you very much for what you do. I'd like to get you more on the pod, to be honest with you. I think there's so much value that you can bring to the audience and behind the scenes. Perry also does a lot of the calls with clients. He does monthly check-ins, and the amount of feedback and you know, the raving fans he's creating, even for himself. And it's because he cares. That's the thing. You have to care about what you're doing. So I just want to say thank you very much. I want to touch base now, guys, on the global market and tariffs. This is the hottest topic at the moment. I had someone in here earlier today that's got a very, very successful online business in the US, and they're stressed. You know, they're going, what am I going to do? I've literally got a massive order, you know, that I'm placing right now that is going to be the first order that's actually going to be smashed with these tariffs. And there's so many different theories out there on what's going on. And I just want to touch base on a couple things. One is we got to look at there's opportunities and there's threats with what's going on. And I just want to give my little kind of peace of mind. And I really want you to chime in, Mark. And I want to let's go rather than talking about the markets straight away in regards to stocks and stuff. Let's touch on tariffs and business, right? Because I'm looking at this going, he's not here to mess around, right? Like China at the moment is really, really screwed, right? Like basically the US is just pushing them out. And I then look at this and go, okay, what are the opportunities and what are the threats on this? Now, in the businesses that we're in Australia, our online businesses, we import a lot from overseas. We do not sell a lot in the US. We sell a lot in Australia. So any Australian businesses that are out there importing and selling within Australia, I think this is going to create a massive opportunity on a couple fronts. Yes, the obvious ones are you can go and you can negotiate better terms. You can negotiate on price because obviously if they're not selling as much to the US, they're going to be wanting to sell more to other countries like Europe and Australia. You know, and that's the case. Now, we lose, right, a lot of local business from local people in Australia buying in the US, right? Because there's certain things in the US that are cheaper, right? And the reason why we started what we started in our e-com businesses is because there wasn't anyone locally doing it. They were all buying from the US, waiting, you know, 1 to 2 weeks to bring it here. So I think what's going to happen is that it's going to create more demand, right? Because those people that were actually buying things from the US and bringing it in here, well, guess what? Those prices are going to increase dramatically. And now they're going to be the same price, if not more expensive. And you're not going to get it in a day or two. You're still going to have to wait that week. So I think it creates a massive opportunity for people that are importing from overseas into Australia and selling into the domestic market. Now, the other thing, couple threats to what's happening, right? When you look in Australia predominantly, right? Because most of us have businesses in Australia, is the weakening Australian dollar, right? So that's a threat because you can see it hit 60 cents. It just spiked back up a little bit. But obviously our dollar is not going to go as far when we're actually buying things in China, which is all USD. So I might be putting.
But it does open up the possibility of potentially manufacturing products in Australia and exporting them out because they become cheaper, right?
So correct. So and that's another opportunity, right? Now, the other thing is obviously weaker customer demand, right? Because what happens is when there's, you know, fear in the market, right? And you open up news.com and CNN and the Bulletin and any of these types of things, like the headlines, right, are scary. They're scaring a lot of people at the moment, right? And that could have an effect on customer demand, right? Sitting on people will be sitting on their hands going, you know what, I'm just going to wait on, you know, purchasing that bigger purchase. Or actually, you know what, I don't need that new pair of jeans. I'll just keep wearing the ones that I'm wearing now. So I'm seeing these different things happening in the market. And I think what we got to really, really sit down, really sit down and have a think about how it's going to affect the market that you're in. If we actually sat during COVID, right? And when you look back, like we say, you can only connect the dots when you look back, but it actually makes so much sense what happened during COVID. If we actually sat there and said, okay, this is what's going to happen, right? They're going to close borders. They're going to put money into the market and there's going to be more money in the market. More people are going to be buying and it's going to create a boom.
It's that time of year again at Unemployable where we're opening up our Unemployable business coaching program. It's over a 12-month period. And with that, you get private one-on-one coaching, group coaching, as well as private and live events throughout the year. You could get private coaching with me, and not only me, but our panel of experts that we have put together. These panel of experts have been in our network and are the exact people that we use in our business successes. People from branding, sales, marketing, our lawyers, our accountants, everyone that has helped build our businesses, you have access to. If this sounds of interest, go to www.unemployable.com.au/coaching and register your interest to see if it's a fit for you and us. Hope to see you there.
So I look at this and go, yes, there's so much uncertainty in the market, but as soon as these pressures are hitting, they're already talking. ANZ's come out saying that they anticipate 4.25% interest rate drops May, July, August, and so on. Like, if that actually happens and there's four rate drops in a period of 4 to 5 to 6 months, right? I look at it and go, what is that going to do to the property market? What's that? There's going to be more disposable income in people's pockets nationally, right? So we got to think about these things and how that's going to affect the markets that you're in. So Mark, I'd love to get your opinion on what's happening, because I know you have a business that you just committed 2 weeks ago to go really, really, really hard on in the US, and you are right in the firing line of this. So I want to know, are you panicking? What are you doing? Are you persevering? Where's your headspace at?
Yeah, so I guess, first of all, I think it's worth zooming out for a minute, right? And then we'll zoom in to my specific challenges with our business. But, you know, I posted something on Instagram this morning and it's like the world is not ending, but it will look different. We get paid by either adding value to our enterprise or our profession in the new world, or making bets on the companies who will. So keep your eye on the prize. And, you know, there might be a couple of people out there or some people listening who are about to start hurting because, you know, the price of their goods have gone up 50% overnight. But that can happen at any time. Like that happened to us in our second year of business after our best Q4 ever. Our supplier went and put their prices up 45%, right? So it's very easy to kind of look at it and say, oh, this is fucked. Those kind of things can happen anytime, whether it's Trump, whether it's global macro changes, or whether it's just a supplier. So we need to build a level of resilience around those things. With relation to, again, zooming out, with relation to governments, so any government around the world, so let's say Australia, if they export, I don't know, 20% of their GDP or whatever it is, 10%, maybe it's 5%, 3% to the US, and that starts to stop or slow down because those products become too expensive in the US and they stop buying them from us. Our government and our Reserve Bank, et cetera, are going to have to fill that GDP gap in some way, shape, or form, because if they don't, we're going to go into recession, right? And so recessions aren't good for leaders. And so what do leaders do? They use the tools that they have at their disposal and they'll drop interest rates to get the property market spurring again. They will put stimulus into certain industries, right? It might be an e-commerce grant. It might be money for farmers. They will do things to stimulate the economy, the local economy, because they're going to want to cover those shortfalls. So important from a high level to remember that it's not the end of the world and governments are going to be incentivized around the world to try and fill that gap and those shortfalls. In relation to my business specifically, I haven't stressed about it yet, and maybe I should be stressing about it, but at the moment I still think there's a very large range of possible outcomes that could occur with relation to the US and China. One of the worst outcomes that could occur is a complete decoupling. You know, the very worst case scenario here could be a situation where the US and China basically just stop doing business together and they make it almost impossible for us to buy goods from China and send them into the US. Now, that would affect me because the product that I sell, 70% of the world's best version of this product, it's a fabric, comes from China. And so I can't just tomorrow go and find or set up a supply chain in another country. I'm going to have to, you know, think a little bit more outside the box. Maybe I'm going to need to buy the fabric from China, send it to another country that has lower tariffs and get the product manufactured in that country. Now, that could open up an opportunity, right? I haven't done the numbers on that, but that could then make my manufacturing costs cheaper. Maybe by sending it from a location that's closer to the US, I can bypass the expensive shipping fees, right? I think the important thing is that we need to sit down and look at all the outcomes, but also not be too reactory because we don't know what that range of outcomes is. Like there's the tariffs at the moment, I think somewhere between, it was 20% for fentanyl, an extra 20% for fentanyl, and 34% on Liberation Day, Trump put on tariffs from China to the US. Now, he's threatening another 50% because China retaliated with 34%. So we could have our prices increase anywhere from 50% to 100%.
Yeah, like you look
but we don't know. That could come back down to 20% in a week's time. So practically what I'm doing at the moment is don't make any big decisions, right? Don't go out and order 2 years' worth of supply because you're scared that the tariffs might go to 100 or 150% because they could easily come back to 20%. We just need to do the minimum that we can do to keep things rolling. And while we're waiting to see how this settles out, I think we need to be looking at all alternatives, right?
So, yeah, I think that, like, what he's doing, right, is some people will look at it and go, it's a disaster, you know, but it's quite strategic, right? Because everyone's been selling into the biggest market of the world basically for free for many, many, many years, and is deteriorating their own economy. It's the same thing with us. Like local manufacturing is basically obsolete. Local manufacturing in the US is obsolete, right? In many ways. Yeah. And what he's doing is obviously trying to create business, right? Manufacturing within the country. And I think what we need to be doing is we need to be thinking creatively, resourcefully. Everyone just wants to go, I'm going to create a product. Okay, yeah, I'm just going to go sell it in the US, right? That's the thing. But like how many people are in South Korea, Perry, as an example?
Just in Seoul, like I think just in Seoul is 10 million. I think it's like 60 million.
60 population. Million. How many people in Japan? How many people in Europe? How many people in South Africa? How many? This is all demand. They all need still the same types of products that everyone else is selling into the US, but the US is the lowest hanging fruit, right? It's the US dollar, they're the biggest economy, but this is where people need to start becoming resourceful. Now, again, I'm on the same page as Mark. I wouldn't be going out there and making drastic changes at the moment, because right now Trump's holding the cards and he's using this as a bargaining tool, right? I honestly do not think these will stick moving forward at the abnormal rates that they are. Like Vietnam's 46%. Vietnam import, right? Like Nike is an example, buy a lot of their stuff from Vietnam. If you're buying a pair of Nike shoes at $200 at the moment and they increase by 46%, they're now going to be over $300. Because don't forget, they still need to make a margin on the cost that's increased. So it just doesn't go up by $94 as an example. It's going to go up by more. There's going to be a point in time where people are going to sit on their hands and go, I'm not going to pay that for a pair of shoes anymore.
I think we've just got to just peek back a little bit. Let's do some actual math. So, like, let's say the tariff gone up to 25% on a $100 cost of goods sold. It's gone up like $25. If you're doing a 3x margin on your product, which you don't want to, you shouldn't be selling anything for less than 3x margin in the e-commerce space, unless it's super high ticket, it's gone up by 8%. So then you go from, if it's a $100 cost of goods, now $125. Can I, 24% margin, can I afford to sell that product for $324 or an 8% increase? How much will the consumer absorb? Now, that's when you come down to price elasticity. And so can I absorb 8% on my side or half it? So, I mean, there's those things to consider too. And also, because I remember when Trump last started playing this game, that I was importing to the US as well. And depending on what you're selling, if it's an essential item, sure, it's probably not going to affect you a great deal. But discretionary stuff probably more so. But you're not the only one either. Everyone else selling that same category, if it's Amazon, if it's Shopify or e-commerce, they're all getting stuck with the same problem. So that's just one point. It'll all mellow out for everyone at the same time. So you're not in this boat alone either, I think was probably the point I'm trying to make.
I think some really important things with relation to that as well, and we can go super micro here. Like there's some other strategies as well where we can actually start to negotiate with our suppliers. So let's say, for example, you're selling a chair. Well, have a look at the chair that you're sitting on at the moment. There's handles, there's wheels, there's leather backs or material backs, there's screws.
Fucking nice to some, mate.
Right? Like this. So there's a bunch of different component parts in the product that you're selling. Even a pencil. A pencil has the rubber, it has the metal. There's actually a great clip from Milton Friedman, and he says no one in the world can make this pencil on their own. That you have to get the lead from a certain country because a certain country makes it more effectively. You have to get the timber on the outside for another country, right? So even a pencil, like every product can be broken down first principles to its core components. And what I would be doing is I would be going to your suppliers for your products immediately and saying, what I need you to do is break down the product in all of its core components. So I want every little thing, the ink that we use on it, the plastic that goes around it. Can we break down each of those core components and say the product costs $13? I want you to itemize each core component and what they cost. And then start looking from first principles and say, well, is there a way to get that component that costs $4.50? Is there a way to get that for $2.50? All right. And so we need to start thinking like business people, right? Because, you know, it's you have these waves, right? Like when reliable education first started teaching Amazon, there was no one teaching Amazon. And then all of a sudden, the floodgates opened. People saw that they could make money teaching Amazon, and every person and his dog was teaching Amazon. So you get all these kind of people who are like, oh yeah, maybe I can do that. Or, you know, the people who get fooled by great marketing. And I'm not saying this about reliable, but there were so many different people marketing courses that no one had ever had any success in Amazon, right? So you get, and all these people start flooding into the market. Now you've got ChatGPT and AI, which basically allows you to spin up a business in 2 weeks. And so you've got all these white collar people kind of flooding into the market. So what these things do is they clear out all of that excess Johnny come lately kind of energy, right? For lack of a better term.
Or shit in another shit products in another term.
And it allows the either either the real business people or the people that are like, you know what, I've got the grit between my teeth. I'm only just starting out in entrepreneurship, like I was in 2019. I was only just starting out in e-commerce. And I'm gonna solve this problem. I'm gonna be resilient. I'm gonna be resourceful. I'm gonna lean into a coaching group like the Unemployable Coaching Group, or for any coaching group, free or otherwise, that you can find online. And I'm gonna lean in and I'm gonna solve this problem. I think there's many ways, and you basically have to be in conversations with people who are out there doing it, good problem solvers.
Yeah, I'd be educating yourself, right? If you're in a headspace of going, oh my God, my business is, what am I going to do? How am I going to increase the prices? Because I was talking to someone this morning, like I said, and I was like, so have you increased your prices yet? And he's like, no. I said, okay. He's like, because I already have a lot of stock, right, that I paid at the old price in stock at my 3PL, right, at the warehouse as an example. So I'm okay till about June, July. But in July, right, this next order, I'm going to be getting smashed on tariffs. And then I got to make a decision what we're going to do, right? But I got to watch my competition. But what's also going to happen is his competition is saying the same thing. I'm going to watch my competition, right? So at some point, someone is going to have to make a move, right? There's got to be someone that's going to say, okay, I'm going to increase my price by X. And then this domino effect is going to happen, because at some point, again, like I said, I don't think these tariffs are going to stay forever, but there's decisions, hard decisions that are going to have to be made by entrepreneurs that are literally selling into the US. I think it's great for people that are in the US that have manufacturing businesses, obviously, that are probably licking their chops going, oh, wow, what an opportunity now. I'm going to actually have a chance to sell domestically. I think it's great for people that are selling within Australia, because they're going to have better negotiation power, you know, they're going to have better terms, they're probably going to get a little bit more attention, because when we go there and, you know, and we have our pigeon chest out thinking that we're big and we can go into the factory and say, I want 3 containers. And then you look at the actual factory and see the guy that's ordering 3,000 containers, right? Well, that 3,000 containers might be dropping dramatically. And another thing is the shipping costs already. I've got to import some stuff for a project that we're doing. And I was on the phone this morning with my freight forwarder. And I said, hey, can you, and I got him to price it 3 months ago already, just so I can, you know, put it in the feasibility. And I got him to reprice the shipping, and the shipping has already came down already, right? And we're just talking tariffs. So what's going to happen is the price in containers and shipping, in my opinion, will come down as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. People just need to be looking, keeping in mind the law of 1%, right? Like, so rather than saying, well, how am I going to get my product down by 50%? If you can save 1% on shipping, and if you can put your price up by a couple of percent, and you can save 1% on your packaging, and if you can set, right? It's those little 1% wins that add up.
I agree. Perry. I think one of the other things is, and you know, for anyone, it's a little less on Amazon, but if you've got your own shop and you're worrying about, you know, the pricing, you're not going to be able to, well, you can easily just do some split testing with Shopify and stuff like that for pricing as well. The amount of times I've done it, and I've said to people, well, why don't you just put an ad out there? You've got your ads already. One of them's this price, one of them's that price. And, you know, lo and behold, you know, more times than not, the higher price actually gets people buying the product more anyway. It's just because, you know, they see it as more valuable. And I think that a lot of people, they price themselves down thinking, oh, I shouldn't price it any higher. Well, you know, you've got the options now to split test 3-4 different ways and test how many, you know, and this would probably be the best time if you've got a Shopify to do that.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting now. Sorry,
guys. No, I was just going to say, like, often the people that are most stressed are the ones that their business is already on the edge anyway. Like, I remember before our second Christmas, which was the Christmas that we ended up blowing up, we started Q4 at like $29 a unit. And by the end of Christmas, we're at $49 a unit. And I remember that at the start of Q4, being really stressed, and Dom saying to me, you know, why are you so stressed? I'm like, well, at $29, we're not making a profit. We're actually falling further and further behind. She's like, raise your prices. And I'm like, oh, we can't, because like we're not where we want to be in revenue. And she's like, well, just raise your prices. Like, it's that or not worth doing, right? And then like our prices basically went up $20, nearly 50%, nearly 100%, in 3 months, right? So it's often as well the people who are going to be most stressed from this news are the people whose businesses are on the edge. So if your business is on the edge anyway, that's not a place that you want to be long term. So maybe now is the perfect time to be bold and try something different, right? And see if you've really got a business.
It's being bold and really concentrating on your brand, right? Building your actual brand and the value within your brand, right? Someone's always willing to pay a price. I've seen, you know, Instagram reels recently going, you know, your $3,000, $4,000 Christian Dior bag costs $75 to manufacture, right? Like, it's not rocket science, but we're willing to pay $3,000 and $4,000 for that as that status symbol, right? So why can they do it, but we can't? Oh, well, they built a brand. It's an older brand. Start thinking about how you can start recognizing more value in your brand rather than creating these glass ceilings that we all create like you did. No one's going to pay more than $29. You're at $49. Why isn't someone going to pay $69? Split test it, right? That's the thing. Split test it. Create that brand value. So when people say, I've got this brand at $69, there's people out there that will brag paying more for the same thing.
Right? I was thinking about that today. It's like we're now at $54 and one of our main competitors on Shopify is at $58, $59. And I'm like, maybe I should just mirror their prices. It's like, I'm about to take them online and they do like millions and millions of dollars a year. And I'm only looking for a couple of percent slice of their pie. It's like, why don't I just match their prices? Like, and then I'll increase another $4 like overnight.
There's your tariff gap covered already.
There you go. Do you, Mark? Do you use a split testing software? Because on Shopify, there's a good one called IntelliGems, IntelliGems, and what you can do on that. Intelli, so it's like intelligence, and then gems, GEMS. And what you can do there is that it, you can put it on a 50% split. You have maybe two or three different changes on a page, and you can then run that test for a month, and then see what incremental percentage. You're getting off sales. But the easiest one is this price is $50, this one's 70, and see if you're getting the same amount of people buying it. If you are, then raise those prices, you know.
That's very good. So IntelliGems, like, this is what I love, because these are, no pun intended, but these are the little gems that you can get out of these podcasts, right? To check that out, because it's all good, Mark, saying yeah, and then we forget about it, but test it. Right? You might be surprised. Mm-hmm. Who knows? All of a sudden, you might be selling yourself short. And the reality is you might have no choice anyways because of the pressure that's coming from the tariffs, and who knows how long that will be here for. Now, I want to take the last 10 minutes of this
call. One last thing that you can try as well is discussing different freight options with your suppliers. So rather than handle your own freight, you can ask them about delivery DDP shipping, so delivery duties paid. And sometimes you might be able to get a better rate doing that, just depending on your supplier, who they use for freight.
You know, I just ordered, it was an LCL, couple pallets of product, from overseas that's on the boat now. And I got a price from my local freight forwarder, who's usually quite competitive, and they were double the price from the price that, the Chinese manufacturer got me. So it's always good to double check. Sometimes we think, oh, I'm not going to use theirs because they're going to be putting a margin on it and they want to rip me off. But, you know, it's always, always good to double check. So
I think we've thrown out a big checklist. If there's people out there wondering what to do, we've thrown out a pretty big checklist of things to try.
Agree.
Let's go back and rewatch the pod.
I want to take the last 10 minutes of this pod now and just have a chat about the actual markets, because I woke up on Monday and lost a fair chunk of money, and I know James would have, and I know you would have, Mark, as well. So where are we at? You know, like, the market literally is all over the place. Bitcoin is up and down and up and down. The markets have just like been slashed. I opened up news.com and the first article is the guy on the trading floor with his head in his hands, looking down like almost like the GFC all over again. So,
well,
not going too granular, but big picture, because I listened to Patrick Bet-David yesterday, and he said something that we all need to remember, right? During COVID, a lot of us panicked. I sold a couple of properties that I still regret during COVID, right? I look back at it today, and I kick myself every time, because it's like, let me reduce some risk. The world is ending, rather than strategically thinking about things. And he said the same thing about Amadeus. He goes, he had $10 million in the market. It went down by 50% overnight to 5 million. He then sold it, lost the 5 million. 3 months later, was worth way more than the 10 million original, right? Sometimes you just gotta, you know, that emotional intelligence, right? And just sit there and think and talk with yourself and talk with others and just kind of get yourself in check rather than sitting there and fight or flight, croc brain, making an irrational decision.
Well, I can start with an analogy and then I can zoom out and talk about what I think is happening. The analogy would be this week. This week, one of my largest positions in my portfolio now, and I had a heap of money in my offset account, and I don't think offset is a great place to keep your money. You should be investing it and getting a better return than whatever your interest rate is. And so I had a chunk of money in my offset, and I basically dumped it into Woodside Energy, which is a petroleum and liquefied natural gas company in Australia. And the reason that I did that, I've been looking at it for a little while, and I think back in 2023 sometime, it hit about $42. Price of the stock was about $42. And over the last week, it's been pounded down to about 19. It got down to about $18.60. I think my average price is about 21 bucks or something like that. And I dumped a heap of money into that, and I didn't even do that much deep research on the company. Like, I did a little bit of research on where it gets its money from. I know it gets its 60% of its profit from natural gas, and I know 41% from oil. But the reason that I put that money into it is because during COVID 2020, when oil prices went negative, that stock only dropped to about $15, $16. We're almost at the same prices that it dropped to when the oil price went negative and people were thinking that the end of the world was about to take hold. We are nowhere near that today. The world might be changing, but we are nowhere near the fear and panic at COVID. And so we're almost down at those levels, which I think is ridiculous. So the other reason is it pays an 8% dividend, right? So while I wait, and I think I'm not in any hurry, but I'll wait, and I think that eventually will double in back in price. It'll go from $20 to $40 because it was there only in 2023.
This is not financial advice, by the way.
This is not financial advice. This is just what I did. Do your own research. And I also think that the world is going to need a lot of oil and natural gas when it tries to build out this AI build out that it's going to be building out. So what did I do? Like, I saw the dislocation in the market and I jumped in and I took that opportunity to buy, and I might need to sit on this for a little while, but I honestly think it was a great time. Now, the funny thing about markets, if you zoom out a little bit, the funny thing about markets is if you went around and did a survey of people in December, are you bullish or bearish on the markets? 9 out of 10 people would have told you that they're bullish on the markets because the price was going up. Well, in December, January, I started selling a lot of my stocks and I got to about 80% cash. I'm way more bullish today when there's all this bear porn and these negative headlines everywhere, because look at how far we've already dropped. Sure, we could drop another 30, 40%. We could. That's a possibility. But we're closer to rebounding than what we were in December when the markets were at all-time highs.
And that's what people don't see, right? Is that lag time, right? Is the lag time in regards to the peaks and the troughs, right? You're in the peak at that time, right? Now you're rolling into a trough, and you can never time that bottom of the trough, but you're better off buying on the down than you are at the up, you know? And that's what,
yes,
like you said, it could go down another 30, 40, but if it's already went down 20 or 30 from what it was, you're happy with that 20 to 30 gain when it comes back, as an example, you know?
I think you could probably watch what Warren Buffett's doing, and it takes a little of the mystery out of it. He got in cash a few months ago, all cash, or the most cash he's ever had, and now he sold
like so much of his Apple stake. He's got $300 billion in cash, and then you've got the CEO of JP Morgan selling one third of his shares. Like, you have to start taking, if you are investing in markets, you have to start taking cues from these people that are moving serious amounts of money. But the other thing is, like, what normally happens with markets is that they lag the financial conditions. So when Trump got elected, the US dollar was rising, interest rates started rising. So those two things, when they happen, when the US dollar rises and interest rates rise, that tightens financial conditions because so many countries and people have US debt. What's happened in, if you look at the price of the US dollar and the interest rates over the since Trump's inauguration, they've been dropping. So that's been lowering and easing up financial conditions. But the market reacts to that on a lag, right? So what you're going to start seeing is people start getting back into, or my opinion is people start getting back into risk assets. You know, like we were talking about Bitcoin and we were calling for 75,000 on the pod back in December, right? Because it had run so much and you can see these indicators and whatnot. But yeah, like, I mean, I could talk about this all day, but
yeah.
how can we put it in a way that the average punter is kind of going to understand? I think a huge part of it is psychology, right? The market doesn't care about feelings. It's often the peaks and the troughs are often driven by emotions, but they don't care about your feelings, right? Yeah, so the battle is in mastering our emotions.
It is, because the amount of times we sit there and you hear people going, oh no, I'm waiting. Oh, the market's going to crash. I'm waiting for the market to crash. Right. And most of those people will not buy when the market is crashing. Why? Because they'll open news.com and they'll open CNN and they'll see the trader with his hands in his right. And they'll talk about the headlines, right? Right. What does Stuart do? Right. James asked it earlier. He gets attention. We are in the new economy that attention is the new currency. Right. So is CNN. So is news.com. Right. The better the headline to capture your attention and scare the shit out of you, the better. And that's why I love Warren Buffett's. I think it's Warren Buffett. You know, be fearful when people are greedy and be greedy when people are fearful. Right now, there's a lot of fear. Right. So what are the smart people doing? Right. What do you think Warren Buffett is going to be doing with that $300 billion? Right. He probably already knows what he's doing with it. He probably might be already placing it, right? So keep an eye on these guys, like James said, like Mark said, who are the ones making the moves, right? Because at the end of the day, they're the whales, right? And all you need to do is be a little feeder fish on that whale and follow them along, and you too will get fed.
It's funny, Eric, because you said that you mentioned the Warren Buffett quote, and you know what the average investor does is the exact opposite. They extrapolate out trends and think that they're going to last forever. So when the market is going up, they think that that's going to continue forever, and when the market's going down, they think that that's going to continue forever, right?
Yeah.
And the best investors in the world, they learn how to be contrarian, right? And to predict the world ahead. Like we get paid to predict the world ahead, not the way that it's been, right? So, you know, yeah. which companies are going to be the beneficiaries of these new changes that are going into place? These are the same questions that we need to be asking about our own businesses. Well, how can I be a beneficiary of things moving forward? We can ask those same questions, first principles, which companies are going to be beneficiaries of the world moving forward?
Yeah.
And which companies aren't? And then we can make decisions. And, you know, like it's very hard to pick the bottom or to pick the top, especially if the people listening are just kind of hobby investors, right? But you can try and find times where the odds are more in your favor, right? So we've just had like a 20% drop in the S&P. The odds are more in your favor that it's a bottom versus when the S&P was hitting all-time highs.
Yeah, I agree.
Right?
Thank you so much.
Beeping
in
the background.
Yeah. No, you're right. Buy on bad news, sell on good news.
Yeah. And Mark, thank you very much. I know you give me a lot of clarity in regards to the market and give me a lot more confidence into, you know, what I'm doing and where I'm investing my time and energy and money. Now, to conclude this week's podcast, obviously with the new what we're doing is introducing products. And so if you have a startup or a fairly new business, what we're doing is opening up products live on the podcast. And we've had multiple products being delivered to our PO box. If you send an email to hello@unemployable.com.au with your product idea. We'll then get the team to have a look at it. And if they accept it, they'll then give you the PO box details. And I've picked up a fair few over the last couple of weeks. And today we've got one here, which is quite interesting. This one is very, very different.
I was going to say, they, product. People send some interesting stuff. That's what I can say.
And this one here is one I haven't heard of, and it's probably one you haven't heard of. And it is called the Royal Flush Japan Toilet Sound. So this is actually what it looks like. Sorry, I got a bit of glare from the light because it's getting a little bit dark here. But literally, it is a button that looks like it sticks onto the wall that's battery operated. And it is called bestseller. It's a bestseller in Japan. It's called the Royal Flush Japan Toilet Sound, perfect for home, office, school, and ensuite bathrooms. It's a toilet sound masker. So it masks bathroom noises with soothing forced sounds with a wave of your hand. So basically, if you know you've had butter chicken and you're in that tiny little office and you've got five other people just outside the door, with a wave of a hand, it will then be, sounds of the forest to mask your other sounds that come from other places, which is quite interesting.
If you had the Vindaloo, it's a mayday. You got two.
Jet engines.
Yeah. You might have to have three or four of these set up, depending on what night it is.
I know so many people that actually get poo anxiety, like they can't
hang out in the house or whatnot.
And so, mate, this could be perfect gift for those of your friends who've got poo anxiety.
Could you imagine Tom or John in corporate going into the corporate toilet, sitting there, and you could just hear these flushing noises coming out of there? You know what he's doing.
Is doing like a big dump. It's like,
but do you really know what he's doing, Perry? wave these hands all around.
So I'll mention the product features, right? So mask sounds of using the toilet with the soothing sound of running water, saves water because there's no need to flush the toilet to hide embarrassing sounds. And there's a sensor type, so wave the hand to activate the sound, no touching required, which obviously is good because you wouldn't want to be touching this too much. Now, if you want to find out more information, you go to japantoiletsound.com, and you basically, there's screws there, you unscrew it, you put the batteries in, put the cap back on, there's that double-sided tape, peel and stick, and it literally just sticks on the back of the wall. Again, this is where it is. This is what it looks like. If you want to find more information,
we'll get Jerome to put a quick clip of someone doing a. Maybe we can get you, Eric, doing a process
Mayday
later. Yeah,
Mayday. So again, JapanToiletSound.com.
There's a product and a market for everyone.
There is. Yeah, it's interesting. It's bestseller in Japan. So obviously they have some issues with that, but again, not a bad little niche idea, right? Like it's could be something for the office.
Japanese people are very respectful, so
very, very respectful. So
looking after their neighbors.
Perry, it's been great. I think we need to have Perry back on more regularly over time, just to give us updates on what you're doing. Because to be honest with you, it's tough because you're such a big part of this podcast and this business. And you're in behind the scenes. So I want people to start putting a face to the name because you have so much value to add. Mark, James, as usual, thank you very much for showing up every week. James, put the text down, mate. That can wait. Please give me your full attention.
I'll just buy my Royal Flush.
Yeah, you are buying it, aren't you?
Couldn't even wait to call it for his booty call to the podcast and just to...
We're running a bit late tonight, so
yeah. Thanks very much, guys. And again, please share, subscribe, comment, like. We're trying to add as much value in this wealth creation space as we can for our fellow Australians and people from all over the world. Appreciate you guys listening, and thanks for your time.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.